You are listening to Setting History Straight with Linda Watson.
Welcome to our program, and we have Tom Stapleton with us, and he is not a stranger to many of the people that listen on our network. Tom, you are not a stranger. Many people know who you are. They've heard some of your programs. And so, Tom, can you give us a little background about yourself and what you're doing?
Sure. I can do that. I was actually raised a Catholic. Our family used to go to church every Sunday, and then it sort of mellowed out a little bit. We just went at Christmas and Easter. That became the two highlights of the year. And then my parents stopped going to church because they had some differences of opinion with what they were being taught. And I didn't ask any questions. That was just fine with me. So I kind of left going to church when I was about 13, 14 years old. However, once I got into my later teens and early 20s, my brother, who I'd worked with, became very interested in searching the Bible and going to different churches. And when I was 25, I went to some meetings and I came in contact with the Sabbath, with the Ten Commandments. So when I was 25, I came into a realization that God's commandments were very, very important. And I started keeping the Sabbath. And really, that was the beginning of my journey of learning. And that's been about 35 years now. And
wow.
What impressed me most was I got very into prophecy. It was very intriguing. You know how, you know, even at the newsstands, everyone wants to know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, they're reading horoscopes and things like that. It's like there's an ingrained thing. It's almost like it's in our DNA. We want to know the future. And I'm not sure if that's what it was, but I became very intrigued with prophecy, and I've been a prophecy student for pretty much all those years. And boasting aside, it's got nothing to do with boasting, but I have been deep into trying to figure out some of these riddles in the prophecies for all those years. So, and I've just been having a lot of fun doing it and sharing some of the things that I've been learning. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. In about 1987, 88, I became aware of the Torah. After learning the Sabbath, it was a few years later when I started studying, and I realized, you know what, I think we should be keeping the feasts. We had a little Bible study that was pretty serious. And one of the young ladies came in. We were all in our late 20s type of thing and early 30s. And she said, somebody told me we should be keeping the Passover. So I thought, well, you know what, I should be able to find that in the Bible if we're supposed to be keeping it. Within 3 weeks, I was convinced that we should be keeping the Passover. Now, this is back in the 80s. When you start telling people you're keeping the Passover, they're really thinking that you're, you know, might have two heads or something. So it's been a while in this walk. Now, the feasts for me are, like, I don't know how people live without it. It's just such a blessing. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I was at a fellowship last night. I met a whole bunch of people I never met in my life before, of course. This is an awakening that's going on all over the world right now. It's this concept that God's law is still intact and he doesn't actually change. And he's calling us back to his ways to demonstrate to the world that his ways are really the only way that it can work. So I'm having a lot of fun sharing that with people and having a lot of fun meeting other people that are coming to the same conclusions. So that's where I'm at right now.
So now you have a project that you've been working on. Can you tell the audience a little bit about your project?
Yeah, this is it's kind of a little baby that I have going on that's growing. We have secured a piece of property in the mountains of British Columbia. And when I say the mountains, I mean we're out there surrounded by what's called Crown land. That's government land, and it's all treed area. Our neighbors are the grizzly bears, the cougars, wolves, coyotes, and so on, and deer and elk and moose. And it's just a wonderful place. And we've got several cabins. There's about 14 cabins, dwellings on the property that we're fixing up. They're old. They were built nearly 50 years ago. And we're actually in the throes of developing a community. Now, this is an interesting community because the laws of the land in the community are based on the Torah. So everything that we do, the people that live there, we have four families and five, actually one's part-time. We seek to live by God's laws, and it's just a wonderful thing. And we have people come, we have visitors, and they are tremendously blessed. So we're having a lot of fun doing this, and the Father is behind the whole thing because there's so many miracles that happened that enabled us to get this property. So yeah, this is what we're doing. And we hold the feast there, and so people come from all over. We've had people as far away as England and New Zealand and all over the States. So we have a great time there. And we're starting to run programs, and we're going to run all kinds of different programs there, anything from discipleship. We've had a discipleship camp there, teaching people how to live the way we've been called to live. And we want to run things like, if you can imagine, things like survival, outward, camping skills and food preparation and gardening, all things like that. So we're really moving.
So I know that you mentioned teaching prophecy, and so is there some things that you would like to cover with us today, that things that you've been thinking about, that you've been studying, that everybody might gain from?
Prophecy is an interesting thing because there's been a lot of people that have taken a stab at it. And of course, we know some of the stories behind that. People are setting dates and trying to get it right, and they've got it wrong most of the time. So a lot of people now have come to the place where they really don't have an interest in prophecy. And in fact, a lot of teachers, a lot of Bible teachers, they just avoid it. And it's really because people have been so turned off by it. But actually, the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation is a book of prophecy. And
yes, it is.
Yeah. And once we understand that, is really prophecy is God's roadmap. It's his safety net, if you will, for his people so that they can navigate through the dangerous territories that we have to go through. You know, an example that really sticks in my mind is the king of Assyria was having some trouble because he was trying to set ambushes for the house of Israel and trying to defeat them. And then every time he'd show up at the place, and they'd be gone. The king of Assyria actually was thinking, you know, there's something going on here. We must have somebody in the house that's warning Israel. And somebody came to the king and said, hey, there's a prophet in Israel. And every time that we're going to do something, he knows ahead of time. And he tells the king of Israel what they need to do. And this is really what prophecy is. It's an advance warning. And people look at these books like Revelation and say, oh, this is scary. You know, this, if we read the first few verses of the book of Revelation, it says that God gave this to Yeshua, who gave it to his angel, who gave it to John, who was to give it to the church. And it tells us, he says, there's a blessing in it. And we really need to take those words for what they say. Is this book of Revelation that we've been given, and I'm not just referring to the book of Revelation, but other books of prophecy that talk about the end of time. These are for our admonition, if you will. Because these things are going to be fulfilled upon us. God has given them to us so that we can be forewarned. And one thing that people don't seem to understand about prophecy, that people that don't really study it, they don't understand that this is God's revelation to us of what he's going to do and how he's going to finish the project that he's got, this plan of salvation, behind the scenes of what Satan is doing. With we've got actually the inside scoop on what the enemy's doing, and any army or military force, if they can get inside on what the enemy's doing, the victory is theirs, and it gives us understanding of where we're at in time as well.
It has escape plan built into it, doesn't it?
Right, exactly. Now there's a verse, and I'm just going to read it here. I'm just going to flip to it. These verses we read them, but sometimes I'm not sure if we really understand what it's saying, because I'm in 1 Peter chapter 1 in verse 10. It says, of this salvation, the prophets have inquired and searched diligently. Now we get this idea that the prophets just walked around and a sheet came down, they had a vision, and oh, this is it, we're just going to write this down. But the prophets actually, it says they inquired, first of all. Now, inquiry, when you have an inquiry, that's a question. So we need to do the same thing. We need to question. When we read the word, we need to say, Father, what is in here that I need to understand? Why is this written down? That's number one. And then it says, and they searched diligently. How many of us are actually, and I know a lot of people are, I'm not saying everyone isn't, but how many people actually search the Bible diligently? What does that really mean? And that's how the prophets got answers to their question. They searched diligently, a little here, a little there, and trying to put it all together. And it goes on to say in verse 10, who prophesied of the grace that would come to you. So they prophesied of the Messiah that was going to come, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Christ who was in them, indicating any when he testified beforehand, the sufferings of the Messiah and the glories that would follow. Now, I just want to back up to the beginning of that where it says searching what or what manner of time. How often have you heard somebody say to you, and I'm talking to listeners now, how often have you heard somebody say, well, it doesn't really matter when Yeshua comes. It's just that you need to have a relationship with him. Well, just a minute. The Bible says that the prophets searched what? Okay, so they wanted to know what was going to happen. And they wanted to know what manner of time, when. They wanted to know the when. So for whatever reason, the prophets wanted to search what and when. Now, I'm thinking that if there are patterns, should we not be searching what and when? For whatever reason, it seems like that was really important to the prophets. So I'm thinking that should be important to us. Now, an interesting concept that comes into it, and for those of us that are on the festival calendar, that are searching the festival calendar, we can see the festival calendar is a prophecy. It's a wide prophecy of the whole plan of salvation from beginning to end, giving the pinnacle events of the plan of salvation. Now, if we take the prophecies of the time of the end, and of course they are prophecies of the events that are going to happen, we should be able to blend those prophecies with the festival calendar. And it gives those that are looking at this an insight as to the when in the prophecies. In the prophecies, you can see, okay, I know what happens at this event because this is the Day of Atonement or this is the Passover. And I'll just give an example, just one example here. Everyone knows about the seven last plagues. Linda, you've heard of the seven last plagues, I'm sure.
Of course, yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, people say, well, when is the seven last plagues? Well, it's really quite easy. If you go into Revelation chapter 15, it talks about judgments, God's pouring out his judgment. And then it says in verse 5 of chapter 15, it says, after these things I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was opened. Now, let me ask you a question. When is the tabernacle of testimony? We're talking about the inner sanctuary when the most holy place is entered by the high priest and the Ark of the Covenant is seen.
When? That's the atonement.
That's the atonement. Exactly. So in the book of Revelation, at the time the seven last plagues are poured out, it's poured out at the end of the Day of Atonement, which is the closing scenes of the judgment, which makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Because the seven last plagues are poured out when judgment closes. So this is just one example of in the prophecies, you're starting to put time on here. So I know when the seven last plagues are poured out. I know exactly on the day that they're poured out. So when you start to read the prophecies like this, it's just it's like, oh my goodness, this God is really nailing this stuff down.
It's very interesting. So you can progress from there, can't you? From that point, you can actually know the different prophecies and when they will take place on God's calendar. And so that's very interesting stuff. Yes.
Exactly.
Never thought about that.
Yeah, it's fascinating because you can locate all of the feasts in the prophecies. They're all there. I mean, I can give you another example, and I'm sure there's lots of people that have figured this out. I'm not the only one because I talked to a number of people that have figured this out. In Revelation chapter 8, verse 1, when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about a half an hour. And I saw seven angels who stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar, and he was given much incense that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar that was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. And the angel took the censer filled it with fire from the altar and threw it to the earth. And there were noises, thunderings, and lightnings, and a great earthquake. Now, in the festal calendar, when did fire come down? That was the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, when tongues of fire fell.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Yeah, and that fire came from the throne room, which is when the saints were praying. It even talks about when God's people were praying, and that's what they were doing in the upper room. They were praying for the gift, the special promise of the Father, and he returned fire down on their heads. And it's just like, wow, it comes alive when you start reading it like this.
Wow, no, I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, so that's something that's really added a dimension in my understanding of you know, to me it's a revelation when I start reading the Bible like this. It's how I know that this is a divine book. There is no way, because of some of these links in here, these people that wrote these books, they didn't even understand a lot of what they were reading. They were just instructed to write.
Right, yes.
And God says, just write it. Daniel, just write this down. This information is not for you. In fact, this information is going to be sealed until the time of the end. And so these Bible writers didn't even know some of the things they were writing, didn't understand them. And so they lived, a lot of these people never even knew each other. And then when we're here at the end of this age, our job is to put all these pieces of the puzzle together. And the story that we're seeing here is amazing, to the point where it tells us that this is a divinely inspired book. And these people actually had revelation from outside of this world. There's no way that anyone could put this book together. And when people say, you know, the book, the Bible is, you know, just another book and it's a crutch for people and this kind of thing. Well, you know what? This world is a crutch for people that can't handle reality in the Bible.
Yes, I agree with that. So, Tom, can we talk a little bit about the Father's escape plan? Some people think that they are going to sit at their house and wait for the angels to appear and pick them up at the time of Lot. There's many concepts that people are laboring under. And I thought if you could take a few minutes and talk about preparation and is the person's role at the end time. You know, it's always been our role that we were supposed to prepare. Is that correct? Because it tells you about the ant and it says, look at the ant, because when winter comes, the ant's prepared. He prepares, he sees the winter coming. And so this time that we're talking about is like the winter, isn't it, in a sense?
Well, you know, it's amazing that you mention it that way. Yeshua's own words talk about that. He said, pray that your flight be not in the winter or on the Sabbath day. For at that time there will be great tribulation such as there never was since there was a nation, nor even to this time. Now, you know, a lot of people read that and they read it and they read it and they don't really see what he's saying.
He's saying the tribulation is at the winter time.
What he's saying is, if you're not praying that prayer, and I challenge people, I say, when was the last time you prayed that prayer? What he's actually saying, that if you don't pray that prayer, you're going to be caught. Where could you flee to if you had no place prepared? Where would you go in the middle of winter? How far could you get? One thing for sure from that verse, and many may argue what he's saying, but one thing is for sure. He said that every believer will take a flight at one point. Now, I like people to help me understand this. If I was going to leave in Canada somewhere that I had to go in a hurry in the middle of winter, how far could I get? Do you know where we are at the camp? There is 3.5 feet of snow there in the middle of winter. You are not going to get to that camp. Now throw in a time of travel such as never was. People don't realize how bad a shape the world's going to be in. At this time, if people will just go back and read the book of Revelation and see the natural disasters and things that are going on in the world, it's not going to be business as usual. In fact, people will be starving. If they don't have gardens that they can grow their own food and they're away from the greater populations, they will starve. And the whole point of this, in God's perspective, is to bring people to the realization that they need him. Now, Satan's purpose in all of this is that he's going to force, if I'm reading the book right, he's going to force all, great and small, to receive a mark on their forehead or on their hand, and that they will not be able to buy or sell without it. So when there's no food, when there's no way to pay for what you have, in order for you to do that, you would have to receive some kind of mark of the system. And so he's going to corner people. Now, if we're going to avoid that, we have a couple options. There's a few theological ideas floating around there with what you're saying. The angels are going to come down and they're just going to rescue us out of this. Some people call it the rapture, and I'm not here to offend anyone's beliefs. It's some people think that there's going to be a rapture and everyone's, you know, all the believers are just going to be raptured up. And then those that didn't quite believe strong enough, they're going to get a second chance in all of this. There's a lot of religions actually that have a form of rapture idea. I would be very leery about those ideas because now we read Torah portions. I don't know how many people out there are reading Torah portions, but yesterday was pretty amazing. And I was speaking on preparation yesterday. Everyone knows the story of Joseph.
Yes.
It was a 7-year period that was coming. There was 7 years of plenty and 7 years of really tough times. And here's the idea. We can know pretty much how long this time of trouble is because it's revealed in the prophecies. In the book of Daniel, it tells us that there's going to be a time times and a half, which is a 3.5-year period. It's also going to be a 1290. It's going to be a 1335-day period. Daniel chapter 8 in verse 17 and verse 19, it tells us, Gabriel says twice, instructed by Yeshua, to tell Daniel and help him to understand the vision. He says, Daniel, I'm making known to you what is going to be happening at the time of the end. That's our time.
Yes.
And he tells us that there's going to be a 2300-day period. So now we've got this thing building. So when we take all these prophecies, 3.5-year period actually is mentioned 7 times between the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation. 5 times in the book of Revelation, twice in the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 12. And in Revelation, in 5 times, it's mentioned as 42 months, time times and a half, and 1260 days. And that's an interesting thing all in itself. These are the same time periods, all revolving around a biblical calendar, which is most interesting as well.
Yes.
So if the time times and a half, the 3.5-year period, is mentioned 7 times to me, that means it's got to be perfectly important for us to understand. And I challenge people, I say, how many of you guys understand what the 3.5-year period is about, talking about Daniel and Revelation? Most people look at you as like a deer in the headlights. So we've got several different time frames from Daniel and Revelation, time times and a half, a 2300-day period, which actually the translation is 2300 evening and mornings. It's given to us in several different ways. And what I believe God is trying to do, he's trying to tell us that we're on a biblical calendar. We're not using the Gregorian calendar in the time of the end. We're back on his schedule.
Yes, and he knows what that calendar is.
Exactly, and he's embedded it into the time of the end prophecy. So this is more evidence that he's trying to get us back, his people, on his time.
Right.
He's going to finish it up on his time, not a Gregorian calendar. So he's, you know, he's going to end up with the same calendar he started with. This is something also that's in the prophecies too. And the reason why I bring that up is because I talk to several people, you know, they're waiting for this to happen or waiting for that to happen. They're going to do this or they're going to do that. And well, it's my understanding is we don't have any time to waste. We've got to start getting ready. Number one, we've got to start getting ready spiritually. We've got to really get our spiritual house in order, to be an example to those around us. Number one, to be get ourselves in order, but we want our families to be in order as well. And we've got to be that. We've got to set that example for them and others around us. But secondly, we need to be physically ready. And if people were just honest with ourselves, and this goes back to my Joseph story, Joseph was warned. Actually, Pharaoh was warned, and Joseph gave him the understanding of the dream. And he told Pharaoh, he says, you've got to set somebody up here that can be in charge and can prepare for this famine coming. Pharaoh says, well, I can't think of a better guy than you. Okay, so this is interesting. God gave Joseph the understanding of the dream, his person, his man of the hour, and then he set God up to take care of what needed to be done. Now, why couldn't God just miraculously supply food from heaven? You know, just, you know, it's like the manna in the wilderness. No, no. He says, Joseph, I want you to start saving food and putting it away. Now, this idea that we don't have to prepare for trouble coming is not biblical. Anytime there was something going on, the people needed to prepare. And Yeshua's own words, as in the days of Noah. Well, if you read the story of Noah, you'll see that Noah was instructed to collect all the food that would be necessary for not only him, but the animals as well.
So, yes, he was. He was.
Right. And in the book of Hebrews, it tells us that he built an ark for the saving of his family. And he did this by faith in what was coming, even though he had never seen, you know, some people believe that he had never seen rain before. I think that could very well be accurate. And so he'd never seen what was going to happen before, and yet by faith he did this. And I have this idea that every strike on the ark was a testimony of Noah's faith in what was coming. And I have found that with what we're doing, because we're preparing, we're, as it were, we're building an ark for the saving of our family. And it's a testimony for people, because they think, you know, Uncle Sam's going to look after them. And I say that as a Canadian. It's a kind of a Canadian joke. You know, Uncle Sam will look after you. And I tell people, yeah, Uncle Sam is going to look after you. If you don't take care of yourself, he's going to. And so you really need to start being proactive and acting on what God has warned us. And Yeshua's his own words, he says, see, I've told you all things beforehand. Well, why is that? So that we can get ready for the storm that's coming, just like Noah. So I'm not one of those believers that think, you know, I'm just going to sit back and keep watching my
YouTube videos,
my TVs and all this stuff. And I'm just going to wait, you know, and either get raptured or, you know, God's going to say, oh, I'm going to take you now today or whatever. No, no. He wants us to help people understand that there's trouble coming such as never was. And our preparing will be just like Noah. It says he condemned the world by what he did. It's not as much as what he said, by what he did. By building an ark, he was demonstrating that God was going to bring judgment upon this world, and he was preparing for it. It's a huge testimony, and I've felt that in my own life. When I tell people what I'm doing, a great deal of people, even unbelievers, you know, they say, well, why are you out there? And I said, well, you know, I've kind of lost faith in society, and I'm not going to leave my life up to them anymore. I'm going to get out here, and we're growing stuff and getting away from the cities, because there's going to be some serious chaos in these cities. And when I talk to with people that are even non-believers, they say, wow, you know what? I see what you're doing, because you know, even people that are not of any faith at all, they can see there is trouble on the horizon. It's like the Spirit of God is speaking to them, but they don't know what's going on. And that's where we can come in, is we can start explaining some of this stuff. It's all written down for us in the Word. So it's a huge opportunity for us to share. Now, what the other thing that we're doing up there is our primary focus up there is not to run out and hide, and it's to be a light. So we have satellite internet, and we broadcast out of there. We have Sabbath services out of there, and we invite people. They can join us via the internet. So that's our number one focus out of there. It's not a hiding place. It's actually about saving others. And we're preparing a place that at some point, some people that haven't prepared, it's kind of like the 11th hour worker, or the prodigal son that's been out and wasted all the father's inheritance. One day they're going to come home, and we're preparing a place for them as well. So it's more than just a hiding place for us.
I think that's very interesting that you brought up the fact that you're preparing for others also, because that's, isn't that the way that we're supposed to be as believers, looking out for our brother? And I think that's a very important concept, is it not?
Well, I really believe that's, if the fathers are our example, if Yeshua is our example, he says he's not willing that any perish. And you know, the parable about the older brother and the prodigal son, and I often think about this, you know, it's hard work. What we do is hard work to prepare this place. There's no question about it. My body has felt the hard work that we've been doing. And I can understand in a little way when the older brother was so upset, because he said, I've been working in the fields every day, Father. And the son comes home, the younger son comes home, and he hasn't done anything. He's wasted everything that you've given him. And he wouldn't even come in to the house to celebrate the son coming home. And this is going to be a living reality for a lot of people that have prepared. And when the younger son, the fella comes home, they're gonna recoil and they're gonna say, you're not welcome here, because you wasted every opportunity you had. But if I'm reading the book right, if we have the Father's heart, we are going to open the doors to people that have wasted everything, that every opportunity that they've ever had, because we have come to the place where we have the mind of Yeshua, right? That's really, yes. That's really what's going on.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I think it's interesting. In Ezekiel 24, let me see if I can get there, verse 27, and it's, well, I'll read 26, and he that escapes in that day shall come unto thee to cause thee to hear it with thy ears. And so he's talking about hearing the truth, right?
Right. Because,
and that in that day thy mouth shall be open to him which is escaped. So part of the role of, you know, people at the end time is not just to save their own necks. It's also the people that come to you that are escaping. It's to teach them. And it's telling you right here, in that day shall thy mouth be open to him which is escaped. And thou shalt speak and be no more dumb. Because at this point, it tells you in Ezekiel 3 that anybody who tries to talk to the people today, they don't want to listen, so you may as well just hold your tongue in your mouth because you're talking to people that don't want to listen. But it says at this point, when they escape, they're going to be willing to listen. It says, no more dumb, thou shalt be a sign unto them. And that's what scripture tells you, that we are, as a people, because we're keeping his laws, we are a wonder and we are a sign. And it mentions that in several places. And they shall know that I am Yahweh. So I just think that's another piece of this. People finally see that they have sinned and that all of this destruction has come about because of their sins, right? Then they're going to be more willing to listen. And we've been prepared spiritually in the last few years to be able to understand Torah and to teach it to them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the Father's ways that he wants to be made known, because they're really the only way that we can have peace and happiness. You know, people think of they're restrictive. It's like he has to let the world go as far as it's going to go so that they will come to the end of the rope and they will reach out. And I think that's really what's going on. And it's not our job to change anyone's mind. We can't do that. We've just been asked to plant the seed and leave it with him to cultivate it. And then, you know, in my mind, I'm just sharing what I've come to understand. And I don't carry that burden where I have to make sure everyone gets what I'm saying. That's not my job, is to share. And this what you're saying is, God is preparing people to hear. And he's also preparing for those to be, you know, speakers of his word. And he's preparing the ears so that people can hear. Those people that will not hear right now, and we all run into them, there's really nothing you can do. And I don't see too much scripture that indicates that we have to enforce ourselves on them. He's doing the work of opening the minds and putting the questions in people's hearts. And it's up to us, those that are hearing right now, to be able to stand in the gap and give the message at the right time.
Right, and you know, Ezekiel talks a lot about this, and I thought we would also read and talk about Ezekiel 20, I think it's Ezekiel 20, where it talks about going into the wilderness. Ezekiel 20, verse 35, and I will bring you into the wilderness of the people, and there will I plead with you face to face. So that's really what he's saying to the people, right? He's saying to the people that have escaped, because there's a certain portion that's going to die. But the ones that have escaped, he said, I'm going to take you into the wilderness, and I'm going to talk to you face to face. In other words, I'm going to have people prepared to teach you my ways. I'm going to talk to you face to face means that he's going to teach you in the wilderness. And the wilderness has some strange things about it. It's kind of a quiet place, so you can actually, when you're around nature, you can see God. Is that not true?
Oh, boy, that is so true. It's amazing, you know, the Egyptian experience, the Exodus, that is such a lesson for us that are going to have the greater Exodus at the time of the end. That the Exodus story is actually a shadow of the greater Exodus. And even from just the deliverance from Egypt, even to the plagues, that's all in the book of Revelation again. We realize that the first few plagues, the first three plagues of the 10 plagues, were poured out on everyone. The last seven, don't think there's a coincidence, the last seven were only poured out on the Egyptians. That's very interesting.
That is very interesting.
Yes, and we see this in the book of Revelation where there just happens to be, I think it's just a fluke, just happens to be seven last plagues that are poured out onto the wicked, which we talked about a little bit earlier. So you can take the whole Exodus story, actually, and has an end time setting. It's a shadow. There is so many shadow pictures in the Word. And speaking about the wilderness in Revelation chapter 12, it says, and the woman, who is God's people, Israel, the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for a time, times, and a half a time from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent spewed out water from his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. This is just, these verses are so packed. Okay, number one is just what you were saying, is God is going to call his people into the wilderness. And I have found, I've been living in the wilderness, so to speak, for about a year and a half, and there's no greater place to see God's handiwork than in the wilderness. It's absolutely amazing, the beauties and the smells, just walking through the pines and things like this. It's just, you get in touch with him. There's something about the wilderness that is so very different than concrete jungles. It seems that you're more in touch in nature with our Creator than you are in the concrete jungles. But it seems like during the last few moments in time, times and a half, here it's mentioned that the woman will be in the wilderness and he will teach that woman. Somehow I think that the woman is going to be a great instrument in his hands to help share his message with people that are coming out, like you're talking about, people coming out of Egypt, so to speak. This will be their work.
Well, they'll wake up like the 10 virgins,
exactly.
Right? And I keep talking about midnight because Ezekiel 12 talks about you'll go out. It talks about, remember, Ezekiel was told that you go take your stuff and you leave and go out at midnight. Remember that in that chapter 12 and in Ezekiel. And then you have the women wake up at midnight. The 10 virgins wake up at midnight. There's something very significant. And we already mentioned some other verses about midnight. Something very significant about people finally coming out of their stupor and waking up.
Right.
And the Exodus, I think that's very interesting because people have not read Jeremiah 16. That whole chapter in Jeremiah 16 is about the second Exodus. Is that not true?
Oh, it's in a lot of different places. But yeah, Jeremiah calls, you know, the call out of Babylon, and I believe it's chapter 51.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's many verses, but you can see that it's a second Exodus coming. And I think it's interesting that you made the connection that the last seven plagues is what Egypt goes through. I think that's a very important concept that people need to get. You know, I thought I would just read a little bit of Jeremiah. And I think Jeremiah 16, verse 14, behold, therefore, behold, the days shall come, said the Lord, that if it shall be no more said, the Lord liveth, that brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But the Lord liveth that brought out the children of Israel out of the land of the north from all the lands where he has driven them, and he will bring them again into the land that I will give unto their fathers. So in other words, when all of this falls out, people are not going to say, well, tell us about the Exodus and coming out of Egypt. They're going to say, man, you lived at the end time. Tell us about what happened there. What was that Exodus like? And so that's what it's actually talking about here, because he's going to pull people back to their homeland, right? Eventually, that's their homeland. So it's interesting. It's a very interesting concept that there is a second Exodus.
Yeah, for sure. And the promise really was unpacked to Abraham, the covenant that Abraham was given. And of course, we see the son of promise there, the sacrifice of his son, that being very prophetic. I find it interesting that Abraham had to go 3 days' journey. He ended up on Mount Moriah, which 1,000 years later, David shows up on Mount Moriah, purchases the land. He says, this is where the temple is going to be because fire came down on a sacrifice. This was the very spot of the temple, and it was a shadow of the coming of the Messiah, the Lamb of God, that would die on the land. And the promise to Abraham was that, Abraham, look, as far as you can see, from east to west, north to south, I'm going to give you all this land. And God is going to actually fulfill that upon us, upon that last generation. All those promises are coming down upon those people that accept his ways. And I don't know about you, and I'm quite sure about you, but I just so want to be there and want to be a part of that group of people that are going to experience all these promises that are going to come down at one time, kind of like a funnel all coming together at once. This is really exciting times that we're living in.
It's an amazing story. So we are really at the end of our time, but if you have any last words.
Okay. Now you tell me how many minutes we have.
At least I have at least 5 or I could
go 10. Oh, no. Okay, we'll try and make this
short. Because I can always cut, so don't worry about that.
Yeah. Now, I just for our listeners, I just want to kind of maybe wrap this up and give you some reason for maybe thinking a little bit more about preparing. I'm running into a lot of people that are being impressed to prepare for what's coming. I personally believe we're knocking on the door of this time of trouble. It's more important for me to know when the time of trouble's coming than when the actual second coming's going to come, because we've got to get through the time of trouble. It's kind of like being dragged through a knothole backwards. It's not going to be real comfortable. So we want to try and prepare as best we can. We've been warned about its coming. I believe that's God's is really his telling us that you need to get ready for this. Is not going to be fun. In Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, Yeshua has some interesting words to tell us about the time of the end. Number one, when the disciples said, when will these things be, and when will be the sign when these things are about to take place? Very interesting, about to take place. They didn't want to know exactly when the second coming is. They wanted to know the events that led up to it, because that would help them a lot to know that they were there. And that should be our question. When are these things about to take place? Very interesting. The very first thing he said was, beware lest anyone deceive you. So the very most important thing at the time of the end is deception. Deception will be rampant everywhere. Not only that, this is a little tough one for some people, but it's what he said. He said, many will come in my name saying, I am he. And the time has drawn near. Well, what time has drawn near? The time of the second coming. So a lot of people read that and they say, well, he's talking about people claiming to be the Messiah. No, he's not. He's talking about people coming, claiming to be followers of his, and claiming that the second coming is drawing near. Now, I'm qualified to be of that, because I'm coming in his name. I'm teaching in his name. That's the way he used the verse. He says, I'm coming in my Father's name. So what he's actually saying is, many will come in his name saying that he is the Messiah, and he's coming soon. Now, a lot of people, a lot of messianic type believers, will look at that and they say, well, they're talking about all these people that are preaching in the name of Jesus and they're not keeping God's ways and they're teaching against his law and this sort of thing. But that's not what he said. He said many will come in his name. And I challenge people, what name do you suppose he was referring to?
That's right.
He would have had to been referring to the name of Yeshua because that was his name. So at the time of the end, he's telling his followers, just because somebody's preaching and teaching in the name of Yeshua, that's what he said. And people that I know that are teaching in the name of Yeshua are generally teaching Torah. Oh my goodness. Somebody, I started to explain that to somebody and they said, oh, this is getting a little complicated. Well, yeah, it is complicated. What he's trying to tell us is don't be a follower of any man. We need to follow the word. We need to be Bible students for ourselves and know what he said. Now, this is very, very important because the whole controversy that we're in right now, if you want to call it that, it's based on what somebody said versus based on what God's word is. If we go back to the Garden of Eden, the problem came in when we had somebody thinking that they could take the place of God and dictate what the truth was. And we know the story in the Garden of Eden. Has God said? The question was over God's word. And that's the question it'll end up in, is what does God say? I don't care what man says, but what does God say? So that's why Yeshua opens at the very beginning of his expose on the time of the end, on don't be deceived. Know what God's word says. And the very next thing he says, he starts to unpack the time of the end. And I ask people, I say, well, what's the very first thing he talks about? People don't know. The very first thing he talks about is war. Then he goes through, there's going to be famine, there's going to be pestilence, and so on. All of these things follow on war. Well, what war? This is going to be the greatest war that this world has ever seen. We are facing that right before us today. And most people are totally unaware of what's coming. We are facing what's been coined as, Curtis Reed has coined it, the clash of civilizations. And I don't think there could be a better name for it. It's going to be East versus West. It's going to be Western ideology versus Eastern ideology. And it's going to be against the largest religious groups on this planet. It's going to be West under the Christian ideology. And I'm going to go as far to say fallen Christianity. Now, this is the modern crusades. This is going to be the crusade that will end all crusades. West versus East. This is coming. And people that are watching the news can see there's something not good going on, as it were.
And that's going to be that first war that starts between the king of the north and the king of the south, which is talked about in Daniel all over the place, but especially Daniel 11. Please read Daniel 11, verse 40, because it talks about how the king of the south pushes against the king of the north.
You know, I was saying last night in a meeting, what we need to be focused on is what Peter terms as present truth. You know, we were talking a little bit about the plagues and all this stuff. A lot of people are trying to figure out, you know, what's happening right at the end. You know, we're on a need-to-know basis with the Father today.
That's true.
And so what I'm trying to focus on, but what I'm trying to show people exactly what you're talking about is that what is right ahead of us. Because if we don't, you know, as it were, find shelter in the time that's coming, we're going to be swept away. Like it said there in Revelation when I was learning that the woman fled into the wilderness and there was a flood that followed her. Well, it comes out of the serpent's mouth. What comes out of a mouth? It's what people say. There's going to be a flood of information that the serpent's trying to consume people by. It's lies that he propagates. So what people need to know right now is how to find shelter in the storm that's right ahead of us. And this is what you're talking about, is we need to know that this trouble's coming. Now, and, you know, the story of Lot, you mentioned the story of Lot, and we're kind of, you know, we're going a little over time, but the story of Lot is very interesting because Lot waited to the last minute he actually pleaded, you know, do we really have to leave? Well, I want to go to another city. You know, this is just a small one. You know, I don't want to go to the hill country. Abraham watched Sodom burn from the hills. Now, I ask people, where would you like to be when the fire starts? You know, Lot waited to the last minute. He lost his wife because of it.
So, Tom, I appreciate you coming on with us. I think this message was just so in tune for this time that we're living right now. I mean, it's just such a powerful and strong message. And I thank you, and I hope that we can have you on again. So with that, we're going to say blessings to all and good night.